but we seem to be doing fine this week.
Yeah. So your internet dropped out, or you just up and left us?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to tell on Patty.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are you all familiar with the term, with the idea behind letter of the law as compared to spirit of the law?
Say that again. Letter of the law to what?
Letter of the law. Basically, two different viewpoints of the law. There's the letter of the law, and then there's the spirit of the law. Or basically, there's exactly what it says from a legal perspective. If you had two lawyers sitting there next to it, hold on, someone else is trying to join in. Are you with us, Lenny?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. You got Nancy with you as well?
Yes, she is.
All right.
Hello.
We were just getting started, and we are opening up with Luke chapter 6. And what we're discussing, or what I was just beginning to ask the question is, what is, do you all understand, or have you ever heard the concept of the letter of the law and the spirit of the law? Again, the letter of the law is kind of the legal definition. If you had a lawyer who would, someone who studied the law thoroughly, they would say this is what it means. And the spirit of the law is the idea of the intent. To give you an example, I once was out visiting a lady from the church, not our church, but years ago, and she was, I'm guessing, mid-70s, and she let me in, and she had a chair, one of her kitchen chairs, scooted over against the wall, and she's kind of snickering, and she says, she just couldn't help herself, she had to explain to me, she said, yeah, I was standing on the chair, hanging a picture, and what she when there she says she explained why she was snickering. Her children had made her promise that she would not get on the ladder. So what's the legal? What's the letter of the law in this regulation? That was this contract, in a sense, between mother and children. The legal the legal aspect was, do not step on ladder. Now, did she break the letter of the law? No, she didn't. She did not step on a ladder. But at the same time, the way she was snickering when I went in there, she knew full well that she had broken the spirit of the law. I don't know if you've ever tried to make a rule, or known of anybody make a rule, or maybe even found yourself in a position where you were dealing with rules and you tried to work around them. I know our company sometimes sets laws, regulations, rules that we do in the plant that sometimes are detrimental, because, well, for instance, we might, they make rules that says you will never, or you will always, and I've even had a conversation years ago, before I was naive enough to think that upper management might actually hear me say something, but I you know, I explained, for instance, one of them was from a mechanical perspective, an electrician, I work in the maintenance department. No one in maintenance will put their foot on anything that's not designed to be walked on. Now, if you sit in your office all day long and make rules, that sounds like a legitimate rule. You don't want someone stepping on something that's not designed to be walked on. However, if you've ever been in a maintenance department, you realize that we must break that rule on a regular basis. Sometimes I work up in pipelines. I work up in areas that that you can't build a walkway, or, you know, so we have to do other things. We have to, you know, there are things we can do to make ourselves safe. But that rule was, again, the letter of the law was silly. But yet the intent of it was still had value. You know, and when you think about it from God's perspective, I read this somewhere recently, and I think it was a Facebook quote, one of those things, so I'm not sure where it came from, but I like the idea, is that the reason why we have so many laws, and it continues to grow, any society, it seems like, the longer the society's in place, the more laws you write. The reason why we do that is because none of us can follow the Ten Commandments that God has given us. And you think for a moment, if everyone was truly following, and of course Jesus breaks it down to two, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. But that's just two rules. And he says those two rules covers everything else. If you truly follow those rules, everything else is covered. But I can imagine you can understand the challenge at times of what it means to truly follow the spirit of loving somebody with all your, you know, loving God with all your heart, soul, and your mind, and loving your neighbor as yourself. It's not an easy thing, and it varies, and of course it comes from different perspectives, right? My child might not view me as loving them when I'm disciplining them, and yet we know it's a level of love, just the same as hugging them is a type of love. So it's not easy to do, but I think you'll see when we get into Luke chapter 6, Jesus is splitting those two, or talking about those different viewpoints. And the many of the religious leaders of that day were focusing very heavily on the letter of the law, and in so doing, Jesus is condemning them because they're missing out on the intent of what the laws were there for. You may remember Jesus saying at one point, I think he was speaking to the Pharisees, the religious leaders, "You blind guides, straining out a gnat and swallow a camel." You get so focused on some of the minutiae, the little teeny aspects of a certain law, but then you miss out on the important things. And of course he goes on and talks about the important things of love and compassion and caring for others. You get so focused on them. So Luke chapter 6, beginning with verse 1. On a Sabbath, while he was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. But some of the Pharisees said, "Why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath?" And Jesus answered them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any, but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those with him. And he said to them, 'The Son of Man is the Lord of the Sabbath.'" Now, Jesus quite often uses this title for himself, the Son of Man. And he's making a reference to himself, although those who are with him may not fully understand it yet. But as you read the full gospel, you understand he's speaking of himself. So you could say that last sentence, that last verse we read, verse 5, basically says, Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath, or the Messiah is the Lord of the Sabbath. So I have to admit to you, when I read this section is a little puzzling to me, and I'd like to hear your thoughts as well, at least on the surface. Jesus tells us elsewhere in the gospel, Matthew chapter 5, verses 17 and 18, he speaks about he didn't come to abolish the law. He came to fulfill the law. And we could get off on a tangent of what all that might mean. But Jesus makes it clear he's not coming to rip up the Old Testament. You know, again, keep in mind that the gospel writers were teaching the Old Testament, right? We're not, it's not intended that we get rid of it and it does not apply to us anymore. So on the one hand, Jesus, and we're told that Jesus fulfilled the law in perfection. So Jesus here, in some sense, seems to be ignoring that his followers are working on the Sabbath. Again, I understand this picking of grain, defining as work, maybe something as that the rabbis were defining, but in a sense, it was work. So you can see the wrestling point here between, okay, the letter of the law said didn't work, and the point of the law, I would say this, the spirit of the law was, what are we to do on the Sabbath? We're to rest. Basically, two points, we're to rest, and we are to worship God. So the idea of basically, what's the word, gathering, I can't think of the right word I want to say, when you're going out and you're picking the corn and you're gathering it
harvesting.
For harvesting, yes, thank you. When you're harvesting your crops, either for income or even for later consumption, you know, this was not supposed to be done on the Sabbath. But when you listen to, you know, Jesus using the reference in the Old Testament about what David did, he seems to imply again that it was okay. And it was recognized that there was a rule being broken, because you go back and look at what David did, and it was, to me, I think it was clearly a breaking of the rule. And yet the priest was involved in it, the priest who gave the bread to David. We're not going to read it, but I'll give you the reference if you don't have it. It's 1 Samuel chapter 21. The main aspect of it is verses 3 through 6. So there's a special bread there that it wasn't supposed to be ate, but for the priests. And David comes to the priest and asks if they have any bread, and the priest says, "Well, I do have some, but it is a bread that's set aside for the priests. It's really holy bread." And then the priest basically makes a decision. And there's not a lot of discussion there. You know, you get to kind of read between the lines, but the priest basically makes a decision. He thinks, well, right now, this rule is valuable from God's perspective, but the most important thing is right now is I have some people in front of me that are hungry. So he responds and gives bread to David, King David, and some of his followers with him. So Jesus is making giving this as an illustration to say, well, go back and look in the Old Testament. There was a time when the law was broken, and yet there's an indication that it was acceptable. So too, in this case, there is a law being... So what I'm saying is, on the one hand, Jesus is saying, suggesting that the spirit of the law is not broken, but yet he also seems to be acknowledging that it is, again, when you go back and look to the reference that he made. So, again, I know this is a little confusing, but I think it's important for us to wrestle with this, whether it's a rule in your own house, right? As parents, if you've raised children, I imagine you've made some rules that you felt were important. But at times, because of differing circumstances, that you may have felt, well, in this case, we need to break this rule, or we need to do something differently. It's important for us as Christians, I think, as we read this and attempt to apply it to our lives, that it's not as simple as you just read it and say, here's what it is and here's how you apply it. And I'll give you a good example, I think, an explanation, a little bit of an explanation to what Paul says in Titus. I'm going to read it to you. Titus chapter 1, verse 15. In Titus chapter 1, verse 15, Paul says, "To the pure, all things are pure, but to the defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure, but both their minds and their consciousness are defiled." So I think Paul is saying in that one sentence that And Jesus made some references also to that general idea that there are going to be people. You remember Jesus talking about the end times. There are going to be people who have gave money, who have done wonderful things, and yet he's going to say, "Away from me, I never knew you." There was no relationship there. Their heart wasn't right. So the idea of giving and doing things, and yet not being a follower of God and having no faith in God, it's not doing them any good. So on the one hand, he's saying, Paul's saying in Titus 1:15, if their heart and their minds, their consciences are not right, then anything they do is really of no value. It's not honorable to God. Envision someone today who maybe's life is as far from God as you can get, but they roll in Sunday morning and they put $3,000 in the offering plate and walk out. Well, that may be nice. It might help pay some bills. But there is no value from the perspective of their relationship with God. But think about it on the other side, to the pure, all things are pure. Well, I don't know about you, but that almost sounds scary, doesn't it? You tell a young person or a young Christian that if I hear that on a simple basis of just saying, well, if you think it's right, if you feel it's right, then it's right. What do you think of that? If you think it's right, and I'm changing the wording a little bit. Well, let me just read it as it says, to the pure, all things are pure. What does that mean to you? And can you see some challenges in trying to apply that to our lives? Some people could use it to justify doing anything.
You can get carried away.
Yeah, you think something was right. You think it's right, but it's not right.
That's right. I mean, I think there are plenty of examples throughout our life where, throughout the world, where people have killed in the name of God, and we would look at it and say it was just plain out murder. But they would say, well, I sense God wanted me to do it, and I would do it. So how do we avoid, or I guess how do we work with getting some clarity of applying this verse? Again, what Jesus is saying about this splitting between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law, and also what Paul said about to the pure all things are pure. What do you all do in dealing with that on a day-to-day basis?
I pray.
Pray? That's right. Spend some time with the maker of the rules.
Yeah. The author will help you out.
That's right. Yeah. And speaking of the author, reading the word too, right? You can't expect to know and apply the word of God if you're not spending time reading it.
Yeah. Well, just like the example you gave. Now, the elderly lady used a chair. It's hazardous.
Yes.
She didn't want to break the letter of the law that she would not use the letter or the ladder to her children.
Yeah.
So she didn't use the ladder, but she's snickering.
Yeah.
She broke the spirit of the law.
Yeah.
Well, or the rule that she gave with her children. But what she did was hazardous.
It was.
And put a chair to hang something. I mean, it's a,
yeah. It was actually more hazardous.
Yeah. So, but she done that because she didn't want to break her rule she made with her children.
Yeah.
You can get that same scenario with your life. Saturday you want to play, but your yard needs mowed. Well, you put it off and say, well, I'll mow and work Sunday afternoon. Well, I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
And I've paid a price a few times. Believe it or not.
Yeah.
And I've pretty much come to the conclusion that I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, she knew that it was wrong.
Yeah, she did.
I think we know.
Yes.
In our heart when we're doing something.
I do too. But I think in some ways, though, Shelva, that we do it, we know it, And yet somehow we feel better about it. I mean, because, you know, that we're in some way comforting our conscience. Even though, again, she knew full well. I mean, why else would she be snickering about it, you know, when I come in and feel the need to tell me? But
and
I...
As a result of that, she might have told a little white lie later.
Yeah.
Long
yeah, but that's, didn't get on the plane.
That's right. Yeah. You can see, again, the necessity of pondering and wrestling with that. We can go too far in either direction. Let's look at verse 6. Luke chapter 6, verse 6. On another Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And a man was there whose right hand was withered. And the scribes and the Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath, so that they might find a reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, "Come and stand here." And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, "I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to destroy it?" And after looking around at them all, he said to them, "Stretch out your hand." And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. So the religious leaders here are intent on accusing him of something. I don't know if you've ever been that way. I think all of us, there's a human element to how we look at other people and even ideas. If you want to believe something, sometimes you see that something. If you feel like someone is on your side, you know, I mean, you think about it from the political process. You have a tendency, you want to, even the news channels, right? You find yourself sometimes choosing to want to believe what you want to believe and be nitpicking things if it's the other side that you don't want to believe it. It's hard for us to see the good in those who we think are evil, and vice versa. Sometimes it's hard for us to see the evil in someone who we have decided is good. So these religious leaders are wrestling with him, and they sort of feel like Inspector Clouseau in the Pink Panther movies. Aha! We've now got him. So
verse 7.
Say again.
Verse 7. So the scribes and the Pharisees watched him closely.
Yeah.
When he would heal, there was no concern if he could heal.
Yeah.
As if he would heal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they knew that he could do it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
He was who he was, but yet if they could get him to do it on the Sabbath,
yeah,
they could apply their letter of the law to him.
Yeah. Yep, that's interesting. I see what you mean. They knew it was a matter, and they were just going to see if he was going to do it on that day.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
My concern in reading this is that we don't get too focused on being hard on the Pharisees, although I think they deserve it when we question their acts and their motives. But we've got to say, what's this mean to us? You know, in what way, or am I acting out and being like a Pharisee with my own personal life and the way maybe I judge others? So they're so focused on the law and the traditions that have been created around the law that they miss out on what was intended to be the intention, I should say, of the very laws that God created. So
We're all like the Pharisees. We do it all the time.
Yeah.
We're people, and you're doing this, you're not supposed to be doing that. Of course, we got all kinds of verses in the Bible telling us, you know.
Yeah.
Take a speck out of your eye. You got you got a plank in your own. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Yeah. But we do the same thing that the Pharisees did.
What? Exactly. I know this is not always true, but quite often. Why do people pull out the rule books?
Makes yourself feel better.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's not what I was looking for, but that's true. You're looking for something to justify. Look here, I did this.
Yeah.
But don't we also find it that we use it to be accusatory towards others? You know, when I was just thinking of something, but I want to avoid it because it might get to personal. I might share something I'd rather not have shared. But there's a, you know, back to our human nature, or that part of us, we want to find the rules so that we can be accusatory toward anyone else. And of course, I believe the intention of the living a Christian life that's honorable to God is we should be looking at them so that we can try to do our best to understand and apply them to ourselves, rather than getting so focused on what comes natural, and that is pointing out other people's failings. So often when Jesus healed, he healed for purpose. You know, again, Jesus can heal anybody at any time and as many as he wants. And I think if you go back and look, quite often, if you spend a little bit of time meditating on it, you can see some intention behind his healings. And I would offer that the intention here was to get the Pharisees to question or to think through the decisions they were making. Sadly, the Pharisees just got a little bit stronger, you know, with their viewpoint rather than acknowledging. Although I think in their conscience, to some extent, they understood and saw Jesus' point. But yet it seems that many of them, not all, there were some Pharisees that accepted Christ, Paul being a prominent one, but many of them didn't respond or didn't, you know, went. In other words, Jesus is showing them a picture of what they're doing. Look here, look at what you're doing, think about what you're doing, to give them a chance to turn. And yet many of them didn't. But of course, there are other, you know, Luke doesn't focus on them, but there are other people there that are also seeing and hearing these conversations. And just as we're doing tonight, and the hope is that they listened to it and took it to heart and put it into practice. So the rules are there for the benefit of those who they are being made for. But sometimes I think there are cases, and again, this is it's a challenging thing to say, you know, because you can always go way too far with it. But sometimes the rules get in the way of doing what's right, and I think that's what the point Jesus is saying about his disciples simply picking a few kernels to satisfy their hunger for the day was not the intent of Sabbath rules.
Did Jesus not say, I got this in my head and I'm not sure, did he not say that the Sabbath was made for man, not man made for the Sabbath?
Yes. I had that verse wrote down, but I wasn't going to read it. Mark 2:27 and 28. Just exactly what you said. And then he also goes on to say, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. I like that follow up, because he says, you know what? That Sabbath rule, it's important, it's valuable, but you know what? The maker of the rule is standing right here before you.
Yeah.
So back to what you said, Lynn, too. Talk to the maker of the rules and follow his direction.
Yeah.
Verse 12. In these days he went out to the mountain to pray, and all night he continued in prayer to God. Yeah, this is, to me, it's a kind of an astounding thought that Jesus recognized a need and at least clearly set an example for us that he needed to go and pray and spend time alone with God. If Jesus needed to do this, how much more so should we see it and attempt to put that into practice in our own lives? Verse 13. And when day came, he called his disciples and chose from them 12 whom he named apostles: Simon, whom he named Peter, Andrew his brother, and James and John, and Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas, and James the son of Alphaeus, and Simon who was called the Zealot, and Judas the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who become a traitor. You may remember back in our previous chapter in Luke 5, Luke told us about the calling of some of the disciples, James and John, as well as Peter and Levi. Andrew wasn't mentioned at the time back then, but I imagine, I would assume, based on some of what we read in the other Gospels, that he followed at that same time frame. But here's the first instance in Luke's Gospel where he describes all 12 and gives their names, the individuals that follow Jesus during those 3 years of ministry. And he tells us here where Jesus changed the name of Peter from Simon to Peter. And notice it's telling to me how he introduced them. All are mentioned basically just by name, with some minor information such as a specification. So James, who's the son of Alphaeus, and the different Judases. But did you notice what Luke says about Judas? He adds everyone else's a name and just a little bit of definition so that he can explain which one it is. But what does he say about Judas Iscariot?
Who also became a traitor.
He became a traitor, right? Luke is leading us. He's saying, here's the guy. We've not even been introduced to Judas yet, Judas Iscariot. But Luke I try to get in the mind of the writer. He's thinking ahead. He's thinking, I got to let him know. You know, you ever watch a movie or read a book and the characters kind of get developed as you're reading it? Luke didn't even want to let that happen. He wants you to know right off the bat, this is the guy that was a traitor to Jesus. He's not leaving it up to the reader to interpret or figure this out. He puts it in black and white.
Yeah, he wants you to know it from the beginning going in, because you could assume that he was doing things for maybe the right reason or his own reason, but
yeah,
find out in the end that he was a traitor. But
yeah,
you could believe that he was doing something that he believed in.
Yeah. Yes, and some people still wrestle around with that, and I think the bulk of the, if you, as you read the full all four Gospels, you read it and you can see and recognize that there was no good intent, you know, from Judas. But I know there are some people that still attempt to do that by pulling out separate verses and scriptures and putting some reasoning behind what he did or how he did it or why he might have done it.
Yeah.
But Luke here, he just tells it flat out. He's the traitor. He's the traitor. Now we'll finish up with the next three verses. I'll read them and then we'll talk about them a little bit and we'll stop there. Verse 17. And he came down with them and stood on a level place with a great crowd of his disciples and a great multitude of people from all Judea and Jerusalem and the sea coast of Tyre and Sidon, who came to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. And those who were troubled with unclean spirits were cured. And all the crowd sought to touch him, for power came out from him and healed them all. So the message is getting out that he is a healer, and people are coming from all around. Luke here has mentioned a couple cities along the western coast of what is now called the land of Israel, would have been Palestine then, along the west coast on the Mediterranean Sea. So power came out from Jesus and healed them all. All who were present, according to Luke here, all of them were healed of whatever ailed them. So the next, and we're not going to get there, but just to give you a little taste of what's going on, and obviously you can read ahead. I'd like if you do read ahead. The next, he begins to offer up some hard teaching. The teaching is often called as the Beatitudes, a word that basically means blessings or supreme blessings. That's where we get into that, beginning with verse 20. But we're going to stop there with verse 19. Anybody have any thoughts, about Can you see the value of wrestling or accepting that there is, whether we're talking, obviously we're talking about God's law here, but it's true of man's law as well, that there is value and there's a time and a place to understand the spirit of the law, or the intent, I should say, rather than the letter of the law. And of course, our focus point of tonight is, as Jesus is saying, so many religious people, and that's not just Pharisees, right? We talked about that some this evening. It's not just Pharisees, it's each and every one of us. We can find ourselves doing that, getting too overly focused on some of the minor things and then missing out on being loving and caring towards one another. And that's one of the challenges I think we have as a church. It's easy to do this, when we don't spend much time together, or we don't make decisions together and things like this. But when you begin to spend time together and have discussions, and it can be a time when you really would need to wrestle with some of these things. Anybody else have any thoughts on, or maybe some situations you can think of in your own life or the lives of others where you've seen a situation where, or something from the scriptures about this wrestling between the intent of the law and the letter of the law? I've probably shared this with you before, but I think it's interesting, so I'm gonna share it again. I had a friend of mine, a pastor, who traveled to Israel, and he was there on one of the Sabbaths, on a Sabbath day, and I can't remember what city he was in, but anyway, he was in a city that had some large buildings, tall buildings, with numerous floors, and in order to alleviate the idea of work, the elevator was set to stop at every floor, so that the Jews who attempted to follow the Sabbath by not pushing the button, they could walk on the door and not push the button. That's how, there are some people that view it that way, that restrictive. You can't push a button at the elevator. However, you can stand there and wait for it to go through 20 floors, and when it opens, you just get on, and then you have to open it every floor all the way up. That was one of the things that, pretty silly, but he said that's how restrictive they get in some areas of the land of Israel. So, you know, reflect in your own life. Are there things either that you're doing or trying to incorporate, or, you know, more importantly, that you're being maybe too judgmental towards others? And missing out on the importance of loving and caring and being compassionate towards others. Anybody else have anything?
I really don't judge anybody else doing anything on a Sabbath, but I wrestle with myself. Not really a lot lately, but for quite some time I wrestle with that with myself. I have a hard time of just spending hours relaxing.
Yeah.
I can't do it, and I got to be doing something. And a lot of that's all under the category of work to a lot of people. But to me, it's really not work.
Yeah.
It's things I enjoy to do.
Yeah.
But I've wrestled with that for a long, long time, and still do sometimes. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important, Lynn, that you read it, you think about it, and wrestle with it, and I realize nobody's got it all figured out, but I understand your point. Yeah. Anybody else?
What was that story I was reading about? Was it about the Jews?
The Jews watched the house burn down because they didn't know if they should call the fire department or not on the Sabbath.
was that a
time they declared to call the fire department? The house had done burnt down.
So that was based on a true story, something that happened here in America, or? Wow.
I'm not sure where it happened. Then there was a story where, I'm assuming it was back in biblical days, the Jews could not tie a knot on Sabbath. Huh. But a woman could tie a knot in her girdle, whatever a girdle was back then.
Yeah.
That they could tie her girdle like if you needed to get water out of a well, you couldn't tie a to the water pail, you couldn't tie a knot if it was a Sabbath, but a woman could tie her girdle to that pail and then tie her girdle to the rope.
That's back
to the chair and the ladder.
I don't know if that lady knows it, but I've sure enjoyed I've told that story many times. All right, well let's close in prayer. I'm really glad you all come. I enjoyed this time. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for your love, your mercy, your grace. We thank you for the desire you've given in our heart to gather in your name. We thank you for your word. We thank you for the building that we're once again going to be gathering soon. Guide us as a church, as individuals, that we would be caring and loving, that we would be able to, or that we would continue to wrestle with following your directives in our lives and being loving, caring, and compassionate towards others. We thank and we praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
God bless. We'll see
you soon.
Okay, yeah, see you soon.